Good afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Today, we are recording episode number 79, and I'm pleased and honored to have with me joined on this call, and we're going to have a nice conversation with my friend and colleague and industry colleague here in Canada, Peter Madahian. Peter, welcome to the show. Welcome to the podcast. Always glad to see you. And I'm happy to be talking to you. I always talk to you, but I'm happy to be talking to you in this context. On this recording, I always wanted to have a chat with you. You're certainly an interesting individual. You got an interesting background and an interesting history in the localization industry. I'd like to illustrate that and bring it to the this conversation here. So, as we say on this channel, Peter, everybody's got a story, right? Yeah. So, and there's a three categories to those stories. One is you fall into translation or localization by accident. One is you studied, you graduated from a linguistic degree, and that was natural. You floated into the localization industry. And a third one I was alerted to, it was happy accident. Somebody happy accident or purpose or on purpose, they joined the industry. So would you mind by getting us started and introducing yourself? So introduce yourself. Let us know a little bit about your localization story, and we'll dive into the other topics.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Robin. Thank you for that. I am happy to be here. I have seen a bunch of episodes before, and it's very, I find it very informative and very knowledgeable when the people who we bring on and the stories that they share, I find that to be very interesting. So I'm happy to be a part of that today. So my story with the language industry, I guess, as a young immigrant, I was doing some interpreting for family members, obviously, but I guess my first real gig as an interpreter was when I was at the University of Toronto, and I was studying psychology, and I needed some volunteer hours, and I joined, I found this volunteer position at the Queen Street Mental Hospital they needed an interpreter for some of their patients. And so I had to go for an interview, and, having a psychology background was obviously helpful. Long story short, I ended up in one of the more higher level, buildings they had. It was this unit that was, for schizophrenic people. There were about 70 inpatients and about 200 outpatients. So it was really a different role that I had studied for it at school at the time. So that was my first role as an interpreter there. And then that became sort of more of a full part-time job and a full-time position for a period of months. And unfortunately, it didn't continue. And sort of my path took me another way. But, maybe 15 years later is when I actually rejoined the industry as more professional at the other end of it, not as an actual interpreter. So by 2009 was the year that I joined Exacta. Exacta Interpreting is where I'm right now. I'm the general manager here. It's a company that provides interpreting services for the provincial government, federal government, healthcare facilities, legal firms. We're located in Toronto, in Richmond Hill, north of Toronto. We say overlooking Toronto, and we provide services across Canada, and we work with enterprise level clients as well as law firms and adjusters and So there's a whole wide range of community interpreting that we do, So it's funny because I see myself at one end providing interpretation and the other end sort of being at the other end of it now sort of managing that, the interpretation and sitting around the table and talking to people about community interpreting and what we need to do better for interpreters and how we can help the industry, become more recognizable and just, continue to take steps forward. So, I don't know if that was too much of an information.
No, that's pretty good. Not many people know about Exacta, and Exacta is like one of those, in my opinion, it's one of those hidden gem in Canada. and the reason I started this podcast and this channel is to bring up to light some of those companies that there not many people talk about. Yes. We're not too strange of an industry. Our industry is similar to any other industry, to be honest with you. Generally, industries focus on the 80-20 rule, meaning that you focus 80% of the publicity on the top 20 companies, and sort of like the remainder of the companies in the industry, they go by the wayside, and you know, not many people talk about them. They don't have a lot of big voice, etc. So yes. I created this channel for to be a voice for the voiceless. Let's put it this way.
Perfect.
So from an Exacta point of view, I know you're located in Richmond Hill, the balcony of Toronto.
Yes. And so,
or the terrace, I should say, to be a little bit more sophisticated. So tell me, do you have like internal employee? You have locations? How many locations do you have? Do you own the company or how does that work?
So Exacta is located in Richmond Hill. We run, we're primarily an administrative office here. You know, we work with about 25 of us here, and we work everything from the intake to scheduling to setting up appointments to vendor management, accounting. So all of that happens in one location. And we work with about maybe 3,000 to 4,000 interpreters across Canada and providing services. We cover about 180 languages plus, and that's done in-person format or virtual. And, you know, we also have over the phone interpreting on demand. And so the whole gambit, simultaneous interpreting, whether it's virtual or in-person, ASL, that type of thing. So, you know, having in-house staff can only, I mean, you're limited to a certain number of languages and dialects and geographical locations. And, you know, we have the only way that we can offer the number of languages that we have and be able to service all these in-person appointments across Canada is by using outside contractors. And these interpreters are, you know, they're on our roster and they get vetted through, our vendor management team, and they're annually, the files are updated and they have to, certain criteria they have to meet. So it's a whole process of making sure that our roster remains the best that it is. And we're actually moving that. I mean, technology obviously has been very helpful in helping us streamline a lot of the stuff in the background. And we're in the middle of moving to a new platform that gives us a lot more advantages when it comes to booking interpreters when it comes, in person, right? Virtual interpreting is always easier to book because you can have interpreters across Canada, basically.
Yeah.
But it's the in-person that becomes challenging because you have to have people in the area to be able to, get there and do that job and make sure they're doing the job. It's been a very rewarding experience for me, and I think the whole team here at Exacta. I mean, the way we look at it, the person at the end of the day, somebody that we're helping because they need help in getting their voice heard, right? And that is what sort of is our moral compass is sort of that. We want to make sure that every appointment is done with care and with the best interpretation that we can, because that person at the other end is needing this in order to say their story and to talk about themselves and the situation or whatever it is that they're facing.
Sure. Now, I'm not sure if you've seen the last episode I did, and I did an episode, the last episode with the ladies from the U.S. CCHI executive director. That's the Health Interpretation Certification Association. That's basically certify health interpreters in the U.S. And the topic was on this particular question, and I'd like to get your input on this one, is around competition, commodities, and how are we faring out in terms of balancing the cost of, making sure these interpreters are well paid. But meanwhile, at the same time, you're not running a philanthropy there. You're not running a charity organization. In some cases, you provide, things for, charity. If somebody is hurting, I'm sure you provide interpretation for free sometimes. But the essence of running a business is to render that business profitable. So how do you maintain that? What is the balance between cost and prices? And I know there's a lot of competition out there.
Yes.
How are you managing? How is business? Yes. What's the health look like?
Yeah, it's, as you mentioned, it's been challenging. For a long time, I feel like the community interpreting sector was, the least important or the least heard from section of the language industry, especially in Canada. I mean, translation is, the volume of translation that gets done, especially English to French to English, is like, it's humongous.
Yeah.
And community interpreting has always been sort of on the not so much talked about. And the community interpreters themselves, they are, we've been engaged as the Canadian Language Industry Association and the Lord at provincial level at OCCI. We've been engaged in getting trying to get interpreters professionalized so that interpreters can be accredited nationally. Mm-hmm. They're looking to have an identification card, very much like a social worker or, you know, some kind
there
of technician or a lab technician or So, and that has been challenging because, you know, it takes a lot of, you need to have a lot of willpower. You need to have a lot of people involved. You need to have champions in you know, in politics that are willing to take on this challenge and basically bring it to some kind of a law. And there's, I mean, what I'm talking about is huge, huge leaps that need to happen, right? So we've done a lot of some of the groundwork in order to get the interpreters to that level, but until we can get them into as you know, designated as professionals, it's difficult to manage anything beyond that. Because right now, anybody can basically put up a sign and call themselves an interpreter or translator, and there's really nothing stopping them from doing that, right?
Absolutely.
You're trying to standardize the
interpretation process.
Absolutely. And once we have that, then we can have, you know, like a table that the interpreters can be fitted into depending on their experience and their knowledge and the level of scrutiny involved for that is required for that, you know, for that level, right? And if you're interpreting something that's a medical, you know, medical document versus a marketing, you know, or a commercial document, that they may not need the same level of due diligence, you know, in order to get accuracy and, you know, the speed and the cost, you know, I mean, there's a difference between them because they're not the same thing. And we want to make sure that that's something that we bring into community interpreting as well, right? So that and that again comes with the standardization of the accreditation of these interpreters and where they land on this, so that we can keep following them. And you know, it's a big thing because it hasn't happened, you know, in a long time, and we've never had the numbers really needed. I mean, you know, like I said, we work with about 3,000 to 4,000 interpreters, but most of these are, you know, part-time appointments, right? Like none of these people are fully employed.
And probably most of these freelancers, correct me if I'm wrong, Peter, is that they work with you and they work with other suppliers as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, they are, so some of them look at this as a vocation, but many of them are transient in that they're in it for a few months and then something else happens and they move on. And, you know, so one of the advantages or one of the challenges that we have that we've been able to overcome is to make sure that our vendor management team is aware of that and that we're constantly making sure we're aware of which interpreters are doing what, if they're not working, how do we engage with them to make sure that they're either in the industry or they're not, and B, how do we get them more engaged in the industry? Like, how can we create more content for them, or, you know, bring them to associations in order to for them to become, you know, more engaged and look at this as a vocation.
Yep. Now, for the audience who don't know Peter and I used to work together. I was the president of CLIA, Canadian Language Industry Association, and Peter was my vice president. And then Peter was elected recently to the position of president of Canadian Language Industry Association at the World Speak event and the annual general meeting, that the AGM that took place before the night before World Speak event in Toronto. And congratulations on the election, on the position, on the new position, Peter. And congratulations also to all of us here in Canada on pulling off such a good, successful conference in 2024 in Toronto, World Speak. Hopefully, the success will increase in 2025 as well. One of the things is for those audience, and we really haven't done on this channel, although I started the channel back when I was still president for CLIA. We never really done any conversation about CLIA.
Yeah.
So for those individuals who are not yet familiar with the term CLIA, we used to be called ELIA, and that's not the European Language Industry Association. That's the Canadian version of it. And I don't want to butcher it right now by saying it in French for you, but ELIA stands for Association de la langue de l'industrie for Canada. So anyway, the bottom line is if we're standing here, and I've been a member for the association for many years, since 2004, I think, and we had a hard time when somebody was asking us, I guess that was task number one I took on when I was a president. I remember when somebody used to ask us, like, which association do you represent? We had a hard time figuring out, like, how do we say it? You know, what does it represent? And, you know, it's not unusual, to be honest with you, because a lot of people put a lot of thoughts in it. And I'm not dishing out on the name itself. thinking about the name and how people came up with the name, you know, years ago. Yeah. It took a lot of effort. It's a smart, it's clever, etc. But it only means something in our circles. It mm-hmm. only means something in our industry circles. It does not mean too much to the outside. So I embarked, I guess, with the help of Peter and the rest of the board of directors on trying to change that name. And we came up with the Canadian Language Industry Association, which is a lot more descriptive. It, once you hear the name, it tells you exactly what we do and who we are. And congratulations again, Peter, on taking over the role for being the president of CLIA. So let's talk CLIA. What's your perspective on CLIA so far? You've been the president now for, 4 months?
Yeah.
So, and I know we're going through a summer lull here.
That's
just
right,
give us your first impression. That's your first interview.
Yeah. You know, I mean, thank you. You know, I mean, as a past president yourself, you know that really the presidency is more like a custodian position of,
that's
of
right. this, you pass the torch from somebody to somebody. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. So, you know, so right now I'm the current custodian of this association, and, you know, I rely on our members and our executive board to basically help out. You know, this is a working board, as you're aware. There's about maybe 14 of us now, 13 of us. It's a good mm-hmm. number. We have some initiatives going forward, a lot to do with interpretation, because again, that's been something that's my background and it's something I'm passionate about. So we're sort of trying to do a little bit more work on that front while keeping the, you know, the translation and the standards and all of that we do, continuing to do that. Events, we're trying to be more involved with events. We had, as you mentioned, the first World Speak, which was a great success. We're working on the second one, and we also have a session with the ALC's gala that's being held in Montreal this September. And so I hope that you'll be able to join us, Robin. And
shall we be there, yeah.
Your support, as always. Robin's not just a friend to the industry, but he's also a friend to, you know, I feel like there are a lot of people who are around this industry, you know, so it's great to have somebody like that on our, you know, on our side for sure.
Absolutely.
So for me, one of the most important things has become to basically continue to talk to our members at the Canadian Language Industry Association and find out what it is that they require of us. Because as you know, everything evolves and changes. And, you know, because of the recent changes we've had, I think it'd be a good opportunity for us to re-engage with our members and see what it is exactly that they're looking for. I mean, there's new technology coming to our sector. There's new regulation that's coming to our sector, whether it's provincially or federally. There's a lot of new things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel the excitement in people wanting to be a part of this. So, you know, that's been really the biggest thing for me has been, you know, every time we do one of these events, and especially because it's in person, I guess people haven't done in person for a while. Everybody's so excited to see each other, and there's just so much, you know, energy going around that's great. And I really sort of feed off of that. But CLIA itself is, you know, it's 20 years old, if not older, and there's a lot of people who've been there for, you know, much longer than me. And so it's great for us to have that experience. I know we have an advisory board set up to help us more with some of these challenges that we're experiencing, whether it's, pricing issues, whether it's fragmentation of the industry issue, whether it's how will AI affect interpreters, and, you know, would there be a need for interpretation in 50 years or 20 years, right? The questions that everybody wants to know, and you know, we'd like to be able to sort of ask more of those of our advisory board and get more answers from them, so that we can bring those to our members. You know, I really want us to be more engaged with our members and bring to them what it is that they require of us, of this association.
Absolutely. And talk about transformation. How do you feel the Canadian Language Industry Association right now? What's the mood like in our industry when it comes to the transformation that we're all witnessing on the global stage? Of course, Canada's being impacted as much as everybody else, but what's the mood like now?
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as technology goes, I think a lot of us were very afraid of, you know, ChatGPT and AI, you know, maybe even as early as 6 months ago. But I think now we're becoming a little bit more used to it and looking at it as seeing its limitations and looking at it as maybe a great tool instead of a problem solver, right? So I think it's more of a tool that interpreters can use and translators can use, and not just in our industry, but, you know, I think across a lot of industries it's going to have an effect. Pricing is an issue for us in the Canadian Language Industry Association, especially when it comes to, you know, per word cost for translations and things like that. I mean, there's a huge downward pressure on this, and that is an issue we're looking at. Another issue is standardization. And, you know, CLIA is unique in that we have both an ISO chair and an internal standards chair for the Canadian standards, so which is unique for a language association and language industry association. And there's changes. So some of these standards are being updated, and there's changes that need to happen. But these changes are not necessarily what our members see as beneficial to the industry, because in a way they're limiting how vendors can be used and how resources can be used. And for that, so I guess those three things are really the main things that our members are sort of struggling with, or, you know, have challenges and we're, you know, connecting on. You know, we also like to have more events. You know, we're managing something with the on-conference localization in September, and maybe something beyond in October, just to get more of our members out there, more people getting to know us, and what the Canadian language industry is all about is, you know, is sort of what we have on our list.
So, of course, events is one of the venues of communicating with vendors. With members. Mm-hmm. And the community is in general, because these events are not exclusive in a lot of cases. Yes. Some of them are open to the general public, students, academia, vendors, interested party, etc. So if you were to assess it from a point of the industry in Canada, from a point of saying, look, this is a survivability, mm-hmm, progress, mm-hmm, or retraction. Where do you?
Sorry, Robin, I didn't catch that last part. Survivability of the
survivability of the industry.
Yes. I think our industry it will survive. Like I don't foresee it ending anytime soon. I know that, like I said a little while ago, people were more concerned about automation and AI and how it would affect the things that we do. And I don't see that as much right now. I think I see more calmness about it, and actually even some positivity around, hey, we can use this. This can be helpful for us, right? But along with that usefulness and helpfulness, there's now a shift that you know, we will have to experience and go through, right? So I think that is something that we are experiencing, and maybe we're just entering that. As these tools become better and better, they'll be, you know, they will definitely have an effect on the industry. But at the same time, there's less people who are actually entering the industry, you know. So we have there's universities and colleges are actively looking for more people to engage in interpretation and in translation and in languages in general. But, you know, that is, I don't see that happening as much as maybe we want to see. So I think it's like a natural equilibrium that's happening. You know, maybe we'll have less need for interpreters and translators in the future, but there's also less of them entering the market, right? Because the market is taking them to other places and not necessarily to this place. I feel like the interpreters and translators need to be paid more. I mean, that's been a big issue for everyone. I think COVID, you know, and then the subsequent inflations that came after that have really proven that, have really shown that especially in our sector, in the interpreting sector, interpreters who do in-person appointments sometimes are paid less than, you know, technicians that do the same thing. Our role is to make sure that we increase that and we bring them to a point that it becomes attractive for future students to get into the program and see value in it, right? Otherwise, So, you know, I don't know if the language industry is alone in feeling those and wanting to address it. I feel like there's other industries that probably have the same challenges. And our goal really is to, again, to rely on the advising team that we have and our team members to come up with solutions or maybe come up with ways that we can leverage what we have in order to address some of these, you know?
So most, you know, and it's just something intriguing about our industry in general, because most industries, you know, when they want to use automated fashion of delivering their services, by the way, it's not just impacting the translation industry, the localization industry. This AI thing is impacting every single industry that you can think of. specifically the knowledge-based industry, right? Yeah. So knowledge-based industry in general is being impacted by AI, maybe more than anybody else, but for a good reason. I published an article not too long ago that generative AI is creating more work, not less work. Mm-hmm. And there is a reason for that. Because now that you've created more content, you need people to moderate it better. You need more professionals to go over it. Where we are going to swing the pendulum to the left and to the right, extreme to extreme, and then somewhere sit in the middle, is that the excitement right now, everything is free, everything is convenient, until the couple of scandals hit the street in the media, like a couple of people, like, or maybe a few, they use, you know, write draw output from AI and they end up embarrassed in a media somewhere. And then they go back and say, oh my God, no, we have to fix that.
Yeah.
I also wrote an article on unsupervised AI and the risk of using unsupervised AI. And unsupervised AI, if you want to talk about, you know, from a being culturally sensitive and being, you know, talking about those demographics that they deserve better from us in terms of how we communicate with them, AI is not designed for that. AI is designed to be discriminatory, to be honest with you. If you grab a text from AI and you say, okay, this looks like Korean, I'm going to send it to my friend who's in Korea, and you end up insulting him, so what good did you do with that? Like, how much did you really accommodate your friend? And I'm not talking about a customer or somebody else. You did not do a favor to anybody at that point, yeah. Right? You just ended up insulting the individual, right? And I talk a lot about, you know, cultural erosion by using these generative AI tools that they're readily available to anybody. And people are rushing right now because it looks good on their budget. It looks good on their cost statements, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I get it for free, or I get it very easy, convenient. I just log in somewhere and get it for free, even on the interpretation side, right?
Yeah.
But where it's going to, I mean, there's many examples right now, AI hallucination, data that doesn't look good, output that doesn't really jive with what you're telling it to do. You know, we were talking, joking about it earlier in the week. We were saying, you know, taking a statement like coffee and bagel, right? So coffee, the bagel, I guess that's the way the English comes out from a generative AI. So if you want to say, coffee and bagel, the generative AI said, coffee the bagel.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense a lot of times, right?
Yeah.
So that whole rush of excitement for free, cheap, and convenient, mm-hmm. you know, I hope everybody is managing and measuring those risks, right?
Yeah.
Because that's risky.
Absolutely.
That's risky.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of contracts that we have, same as you guys and everybody else in this industry, they have, you know, strict quality control, you know, requirements. And, you know, so I guess it remains to be seen what happens with that. And, you know, because there are hallucinations and there's a lot of mistakes. And, you know, what we've heard from a lot of the translators is that they prefer to actually work from scratch on something than to take an AI generated that's been translated and to fix it.
100%.
Because the language that's being used in the AI is not the language that is should have been used, right? So that's very important.
Yeah, that's right. Now, on continuing on with the communication and the plan event for CLIA, so you've got the ALC coming up at September 11 in Montreal, which you mentioned earlier. I guess I'll see you in Montreal.
Absolutely.
And by the way, for the audience, CLIA will be moderating a session about CLIA at the conference, and me and the team from CLIA will be there to help with that. And if you're listening to this and you're attending the ALC event in Montreal, would love to see you, would love to connect with you there. Also, during that event, I promised Karen, the president of ALC, that I will be doing some one-on-one podcasting with several people there. So I'll be taking some of the equipment with me. I'll mic you up, guys. If somebody's interested in getting their voice heard, do a 10-minute podcast with me, and we'll publish that the following week when I get back to the office. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be exciting. Unfortunately, personally, I'm only staying one day, because my wife decided that I need a vacation, and the next day I'll be traveling. So,
excellent.
Who better know than my wife?
Any wife, happy life. Yeah, no, it sounds great. Look forward to seeing you there. It should be exciting. And, you know, they're coming to Montreal, and we thought CLIA should welcome them. So we're sponsoring their first night, I think their first dinner or something, when they're coming to welcome them to the city.
Sure.
And we have a session on Wednesday, I think at 11 a.m. So after all the sort of the speeches, and once it gets going, so we have one of the first sessions, which is great. And I look forward to sort of telling the ALD crowd more about CLIA and, you know, how we are different from them and how we're similar to them, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's important for them to see, you know, to see CLIA and how we're evolving. And, you know, the thing is, I think a lot of language industry companies around the world are sort of evolving the same way because we're all being, you know, we're all being affected by the challenges.
Same idea.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Also, you're working on the on conference in Toronto, right?
That's right. Yes.
So when is that happening, Peter? What's the date?
I believe it's September, maybe. So I want to say 22nd.
Yeah, I remember. I remember Oleg sending me a note on this one, and I mentioned to him that I'm going to be out of the country that week. But you know, you're in good hands with the rest of the team. So.
Yeah, absolutely. We look forward to people who register and CLIA sponsoring lunch for everyone. So we look forward to these engagements and these opportunities to talk to people and get their perspective from the different ends of the language industry and not just from our own sort of tunnel vision, right? We want to get the whole vision of what is happening across.
So and for the audience who is interested in the ON conference, it's happening in Toronto. Or any of our events, really, in any of the CLIA events. If you're interested in that, in any of our events, look up the Canadian Language Industry Association on Google. Go to our event page. All the events are listed there.
Yes.
And also the board is listed on our website, too. If you need to get a hold of anybody, easily accessible, you can find us either on LinkedIn or shoot us an email. If you want to find out a bit more information about what we do, how can you contribute? The association is really a functioning, a working group of passionate people. They don't get paid. These individuals are non-salaried. For those people who are thinking like, oh, you know, you're president, you must make a ton of money because you're president of an association. Based on experience, four-year experience, I'll tell you, you make nothing. Sometimes you make more headache than money. So
yes, absolutely. You end up picking up tabs.
You end up paying for people. So
yeah,
no, I encourage everybody to get involved. If you're passionate about the industry, if you're passionate about this channel that we're talking on this today and the conversation that we've been having for the year and a half that here on this channel, if you're passionate about any of these topics, I highly encourage you to not necessarily just the Canadian, if you happen to be not in Canada or coming to listen to us from somewhere else in the world, you're welcome to feel free to get involved in the Canadian Language Industry Association, but I'm 100% certain you have local associations in your countries. Feel free to get involved with those as well. I highly encourage you. That's how we amplify our messages across as passionate in the Canadian Language Industry Association or Language Industry Association in general. And one of the things that we started the conversation with is AI and the threat of AI. So there's two schools of thoughts I'd like to get your opinion on. So CSA Research, NIMSY, Slater, you know, everybody who's who in the zoo on the research side is telling us that, you know, the industry is going to grow triple fold. Because of AI. Now, when I talk to anybody like, it, you know, Peter or, you know, the 73, 78 episodes that I've done before, I get maybe like the 90% of the individuals telling me that, no, that's not reality. Reality is not the case at all. We're seeing revenue slowing down.
Yeah.
But there is this notion out there that AI is going to, you know, quadruple the size of the or triple the size of the industry. What's your
I mean, I don't really know what they are basing the research on. So, but as you mentioned, what I see on the ground level is that there is you know concerns and there's evidence that there is a slowdown in the industry. I don't know if all of it is AI related. I mean, you know, there's an inflation issue. There's a war happening, a couple of wars. So, you know, I think there's a lot of outside forces that are influencing everything. It's tough to say. Like, I don't know where that research is coming from, but I think maybe they mean that because there's additional content, then they'll be able to have it translated into many, many different languages. And some of those may not be, I mean, some of those are supported by AI, but many of them may not be. And I think maybe that's the additional work that they may be talking about. I'm not really sure. I mean, personally, I don't know what to expect, I don't know the impact that AI will have on our industry. Like it could be as big as having a new software to aid us for organization or administrative skills, you know, skill set processes or for the language based ones. or is it something that's completely going to take over? You know, is it going to take over everything that we do in a few years? I don't really know.
Yeah.
And I follow this stuff quite a bit. So, you know, it's tough to say. What are your thoughts, Robin? I'd love to hear what you think.
On my side, I feel like, you know, the numbers are a bit misleading, right? So, you know, when you and I or somebody in our mid-market, I would say, would think about the industry, would think about it from a legacy point of view and inching our way toward the technology new world that we're living in, right? So, however, when research companies or research industry look at it, they look at it from a dollar invested in the industry, from dollar generated within the industry. Example, you know, companies such as HeyGen gets like, I don't know, $1 billion investment. Yeah. You know, that is that a growth into the industry? I mean, they got $1 billion investment. That's not revenue. They didn't cause, you know, $1 billion of additional customer revenue to come in. Maybe down the road it will. I have no idea. I'm just using that as an example. So we sometimes conflate between how we measure the industry. And I've always been, like, for 20 years now, I've been always saying this. Metrics in our industry is a bit skewed. And that's my personal opinion. I know Nimzi and the rest of the folks probably disagree with me vehemently, but my personal view on this, because 99% of our companies in the industry, 99.9% of our companies in our industry, they're not publicly traded. What does that mean? It means that they don't need to report based on a specific standard to the SEC or whoever the authorities are in that region that they are listed in as a publicly traded company. So most of these individual companies, they report the numbers based on what the marketing idea sounds like. So if I'm better showing, you know, putting out a better numbers out there, I mean, it's merely a form that they have to fill out and submit it. Mm-hmm. There are some algorithms in the back to measure to see if, you know, they're telling the truth or not. And I've heard about some of those algorithms. But I tell you, if you were to come into a small company that you and I know about, and we know a lot of times what the revenue look like, I mean, it's not a secret. Yeah. And then I see a number, you know, they're listed on this list being number 10 or something. I'm thinking, like, what happened?
Yeah.
So in my opinion, in my humble opinion, the legacy business will always be there. The legacy business will shrink a little bit.
Yeah.
But it will, the pendulum will swing out. Like, there's a couple of events in the world that helped drive the language industry dramatically, right? So 9/11 happened 24 years ago now. And there was a huge boom in, you know, specific language that we did not really communicate with before for translation. And I know, like, one of our common friends here who started his business, same idea what you just did, based in the University of Toronto. Same idea. He was asked to translate a few things, and he did. And from there on, it got mushroomed, right? Okay. So are we waiting for the next big event to drive more translation? Maybe Cleon? I have no idea. But unearthly people coming to invade us, maybe? I have no idea. But what it seems to me is we are going to use it's at this point, it's tolerance, right? So how well the markets kind of tolerate AI right now and say, I can live with this quality. Before the market gets slapped on the wrist and say, okay, now I don't want this quality, I want a better quality. And there's two options. You either do it manually or fix AI, because AI is fixable. You can train the engine, you can do better with AI, etc. I'm not saying AI is dumb, but if we use it in its raw format, it's risky. If you supervise it, you train it, you customize it, you build it for a specific reason, topic, subject, language combination, all these things, feed it the memory, feed it the terminology. Yes, it has a lot of potential. But people are struggling right now in terms of spending the investment money on customizing AI versus turning around and saying, no, that's good enough. I'll just put it in ChatGPT and it comes out like looking like Spanish. I don't know. It looks like my cousin was able to. Whatever.
No, absolutely. And I think some language combinations are probably a lot more attractive to get AI going on, right? So, you know, English to French, or, you know, English to Spanish, or, you know, some of these big languages that are constantly being
absolutely correct, because that's one of the point that I mentioned last week. You know, there is AI seems to be focusing on the what I call the large language where you have a lot of data for them, right? So when you have like the sub-Saharan languages, or you have, like, we were talking about Arabic a few weeks ago, and AI hasn't made a lot of inroads in there, although this is getting better. But not as much, you know, I want to call it a repository of data that you can work with to train those models, versus if you're talking English to French Canada or English to French France, Italian, Spanish, all the FIG languages, right? Where you have a lot more data to use to train these models.
And I was just thinking, I wonder what it does with some languages that are more character-based, you know? So they're just, you know, that they're not alphabet-based.
Yes.
I wonder if that does better there or not. So it'd be interesting to, you know, to see that.
Absolutely. And based on this one, we have a few more minutes left. Always love talking to you, man. This conversation can go on for an hour and a half, and I wouldn't get tired of it.
I was gonna mention that, you know, you mentioned a few times that the industry has changed, and I wanted to just we talked about this before, but you know, interpretation really has been changing because of technology. Because before, every person had their own interpreter, like every world leader had their own interpreter that would go along with them. And these interpreters were characters, and they had their own personality. And everybody knew this interpreter because there was the voice for this person, this important. And this was like thousands of years prior to that, right? And then, you know, in the 1930s, you know, we get the first radio signal because of technology. And right then and then, interpretation can become done now remotely, because now somebody can say something here, somebody can hear it somewhere else, and they can translate it, right? So this really was the first step. And then during COVID, what happened was a lot of community interpreters, along with everybody else, because of the shutdown, they were able to get online, and they were able to use the cameras and Zoom and Teams and WhatsApp and Kudo, right? All these resources that were available, and they really, at that point, you didn't have to have an in-person interpreter anymore, you know. So now you can have interpretation done remotely across the world. I mean, there's some instances for medical appointments and things like that where you really need to have somebody present, because there's some things that a camera will not be able to work on. But I think technology has allowed for this also to be, to, you know, and maybe AI combined with that is the next step, you know. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? You know, evolution of technology never stops. That's one thing that is certain. The attractiveness of language and AI seems to be like a sort of a natural progression for AI, or natural ground to develop AI, is languages.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Although we've seen it in other industry, like quality and assessment of financials and all that, invoicing, etc.
Yes.
But languages seems to be like a lot more concentrated in terms of where AI can show bigger impact of success.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, you were mentioning that you could go to ChatGPT and put something and have it translated to another language, right? Great. If you don't speak that language, how do you know what that thing is?
That's my point.
Right? So you still need to have somebody who speaks that language to read it. Yep. Yeah, this is the, you know, this is what it's supposed to say. And that in itself is, you know, so I don't know. I mean, it's a it's an interesting topic, right?
Absolutely. And the worry here is that for those employees that they're working for companies, that they're telling them, you know, you're responsible for your own budget and you're supposed to pick the cheapest and all that stuff. Yeah. I hope the cheapest doesn't mean down the road a scandal of some sort.
Yes.
You know, we've seen this in the media before a million times.
Yes.
I hope that's not what it is. I hope a $100 translation doesn't cost a couple of $1 million to fix.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, and these things, you know, yeah, I mean, and those are things that you can put a value on, but it could be in the judicial system where somebody's innocence or guilt can be, you know, dependent on this translation or interpreting, or in the medical field, you know, where somebody's health and wellness and many things can be, you know, can be related to.
Imagine in the health sector, like it'd be crazy.
Absolutely. So these are like huge risk points that as you mentioned, you know, these people, you know, the companies and organizations that are looking at cost savings, they need to really consider that hey, what will happen if something goes wrong because of this translation, you know?
That's right.
It's like you have the 10-cent fuse to you know, prevent the screen from blowing up, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Not the other way around.
That's the other way around, yeah. Hey, Peter, thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Same here. Thank you for your
I hope you come back again and we'll do another deep dive into a certain topic. We'll pick a topic and we'll
Absolutely. I'd like to catch up with you at the World's, at the gala, ALC's gala in Montreal for a podcast. I think it'll be great.
That'll be great. I'll see you there in Montreal. So to our audience, I want to thank you so much for listening in. Thanks for joining me today on this podcast with my friend Peter. And I hope you continue supporting this channel by liking, commenting, and sharing this content. And if you have any suggestions for future episodes or future discussion topics, please reach out to me and let me know what those are, and we'll be happy to accommodate. Thanks again from me and my friend Peter, and we'll see
you. Fantastic. All right. Take care.